From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of April, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, California has done it again. It is leading the nation towards a low-carbon fuel standard. It still isn't quite clear what that'll mean for corn-based ethanol. And Bungie has reported a first-quarter loss. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll close out this business week by getting a bit dirty. We'll have the ins and outs of trying to use strip-till in the springtime. The Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon, of course, is a production of Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finish the day like this. Nearby May wheat, a 5.31 and a half settlement, or rather, I take that back, nearby wheat at 5.32 and a quarter settlement, up 3. July at 5.43 and a quarter, up 2.5. And September futures for the day finished at 5.70 and a half, up 2.75. December contract, 5.93 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents. The March at 6.07 and three quarters, up 2 as well. May corn futures, $3.77, down 4. July at 3.85 and three quarters, 4.25 lower. September, 3.95 and a quarter, down 4.5. And December futures at 4.06 and three quarters, down 4.75. March corn futures, $4.19, 4.5 cents lower on the afternoon. Oat futures, May contract, $1.93, down 3/4 for the day. May soybean futures, 10.40 and a quarter from the complex there, up 2.5 cents. July, 10.34, up 2. August up 2 at 10.10 and a half, and September beans at 9.70 and a quarter, up 4.75. November soybean futures, $9.33 and a quarter, up 9.75. January at 9.38, up 9.75. May bean meal at 3.25.40, up 50. July at 3.18.30, up 50. May oil up 14 at 36.34. July at 36.65, 15 higher from the Mercantile Exchange side of the CME Group. April live cattle futures, $86.85, down 90 cents today. June futures, $82.60, down 87.5. And the August at $82.97.5, down 70. April feeders, $99.75, up 20. The May down 7.5 at $99.12.5. And May lean hog futures, $69 even, 55 cents lower. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Well, we don't have those at the moment, so we won't take a look at them. We'll get back to them when we can with the outside markets. But we do want to remind you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of interesting things, including this report, Commodity Week, the pre-opening, opening clump, pre-opening and opening market reports, and USDA reports. It's all at willag.org. And if you can't get to that address and you can't hear us on the radio, how about dialing us up on your telephone? It's 217-333-3434 each and every day at 3:15 and at 10:15. We post some numbers and a bit of the analysis. So dial the number, 217-333-3434, if you get that opportunity. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like tonight. In northern Illinois, should become partly to mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows between 60 and 65. Tomorrow in northern and far western parts of Illinois, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 65 in northwestern Illinois to 84 in the far south. Heavy rains will shift from northwestern Illinois this weekend to the Ohio River by Wednesday morning. There will be several chances of follow-up rains for the end of next week and into the first week of May. The heaviest precip will fall in the southern sections, especially near the Ohio River. Temps will remain above average through the weekend. Cooling next week will be slightly above average, expected in the south, and near the slightly below average temperatures, likely in the north. More on the weather forecast with Steve Hilberg when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. On the line with us today, Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
Hey, are you rip, ready, raring to go today?
Well, I think so. I think we're going to have to give some marriage advice, though, in our opening comments here. I'm going to take my wife out to brunch Sunday, because if you live in central Illinois or central Indiana, next week's going to be pretty rough, and I bet we're going to be pretty rough on our wives. So let's butter them up and take them out this weekend.
is that the primary advice you've been giving on the phone today?
That is the best, cheapest, best advice I could give you today.
Oh, so it looks kind of rough. Well, tell me about this marketplace, because I've got some analysts that are feeling neutral to bearish. I've got a couple that are feeling kind of friendly at the moment, too. Where do you stand?
I think we've squandered an opportunity this week. We're not going to get too worried about it because it was expected. You know, we talked a lot about this on Commodity Week last week, about the ethanol and about the CO2 emission issue out in California. And between that being probably about 80% of the weight to the corn market and the other 20% being the rapid pace of Iowa and some of the western states funneling that information into the news and into the price of corn, that really did it for today's price action. But today was one of those days where corn really was the leader to the marketplace, and sentiment especially. Other than some July Nov bean spreading around the beans, the trade was really waiting for the corn to move higher given the weather. And given especially during the mid part of the session, Dees corn did hit its 100-day moving average. And if it couldn't go up after that, and given the fact that it had weather, the dollar, the gold, weekly exports, crude oil, wheat was supportive, the Dow Jones was supportive, and then you get these moving averages taken out yesterday, the 10 and the 50 days, you test the 100-day, and you can't do anything with that. I'd say we squandered an opportunity, but we're not going to get too worried because we haven't done anything technically damaging to the market. We closed down a quarter penny for the week, and then we're just going to look at it at face value. But the ethanol issue and the demand issue really held the trade captive, kind of held the corn prisoner from breaking out on this in this bullish wet weather.
You know, there's still, it appears to me, at least, not quite sure what the decision in California will mean for ethanol at this point, though they took a decision that could have an impact, although it appears that the news reporters at least are saying, well, we don't know which way this is going to go.
Right.
It could be good, depending on how they view indirect impact of land use, I suppose.
Well, I think two things. Number one is California consumes about 11% of all the United States gasoline. So it's 11% of the consumption of U.S. gasoline. And if you take the route of Wesley Clark, the former general who is now the spokesperson for one of the biggest ethanol-led lobbies, you know, so he is politically motivated. But if you take his situation and his mindset for ethanol, this legislation would take into account the CO2 created during planting and harvesting of corn, as well as production of ethanol, of corn into ethanol, and then finally how much CO2 the gasoline is emitted out of the actual vehicle during the mode of transportation. So even though we're talking about ethanol in California, it's probably Midwest-grown ethanol that's being blended, and therefore it would take into account, under what Clark is talking about in this legislation, Illinois and Indiana corn and how it's grown. So I think that's the biggest issue to the corn grower. The biggest issue to me is, really bigger than that even, is how do we cut consumption of gasoline and our major mandated blending fuel is ethanol. How do we cut gasoline and not cut ethanol, regardless of where you sit on the CO2 emission front? So to me, it's a big issue.
I'm sorry, as you were talking, I was thinking about something else, and it popped in my mind, and it shouldn't have, but I would say if they're going to count this, it's kind of interesting, because you're growing a food crop, you're growing a crop for consumption in our gas tanks as well, and it just seemed a little odd, something that I shouldn't share it. I was thinking about dinosaur flatulence, actually.
Well, I think that, and I think the other thing too, Todd, is we really do come in our analysis, and when we do public speaking, we do really go head to head with a lot of the more knowledgeable people in the universities, and we do mean that they're more knowledgeable. But in our view, the Middle East policy of protecting oil with our troops and all of our military bases, I have to say that needs to be included. If we're going to go down this route of CO2 emissions, then every aircraft carrier that's over in the Middle East protecting our oil, that should be counted in the CO2 emissions as well. And I think that brings ethanol right back up into the table. I guess in a nutshell, I'm saying the military and our policies in the Middle East ever since the mid-50s, when Saudi Aramco took over their own oil and we had to defend our own oil needs, that is a subsidy. And I think if you look at it in that light, I think then you get back to an even keel, and maybe we can come together a little bit better that way.
Well, it'll be interesting how the politics play out. It's interesting that California is involved. They tend to lead the nation in these environmental battles most of the time.
Indeed they do, and I think that's what really captured the corn market today. To finish out the week, because it was hanging over everybody's minds, I think, all week long.
Indeed. Well, we'll have to watch how that one plays out. I think it's almost a, I think it'll be fun to watch it because it'll be a California versus Washington, D.C. in some respects. Washington made a decision after 9/11 to invest in biofuels in a big way. The easiest one, of course, to bring up to par was ethanol, corn-based ethanol. And that'll be interesting to see how those two things play out in Washington, D.C. And we'll be sitting here watching, but it has an impact on the farmer's bottom line all the way through. So Washington and California probably need to be mindful of that as well. What do you see in the soybean market?
Well, the spread continued to weaken. The July NOVE spread continued to weaken today. That was something that was kind of a major part of the trade all week long. I think the trade is kind of battling back and forth with itself on whether we're topping out on the demand side of the equation when it comes to China. Now, there's nothing there that would say that's happening because of the great exports we saw all week long. And we had another big announcement of 120,000 tons to unknown destinations this morning. But still, that didn't seem to, any of these news of exports didn't really generate any front-end leadership in the July NOVE bean spread. And so that's our best gauge for the sentiment of the trade right now in terms of demand. And so that is one of the inner workings in the bean complex. The other side of the equation goes back to Minneapolis wheat rallied sharply Wednesday and Thursday. There was some profit-taking today. But the Northern Plains, it just isn't going to get hardly any spring wheat planted from what the trade suspects. And that's probably going to go to beans, or they're either going to be beans or it's not even going to get planted to anything. So the November beans are working firmer on a weaker pulling back spread liquidation, spread unwinding. But the fundamentals in November beans with the Northern Plains and now with the Central Corn Belt looking at many inches of rain over the next 10 days is actually fundamentally getting more weak. And caught in the middle of this is where is Chinese demand. And the Chinese Commerce Ministry official said that we're getting too much supply here in China. Our domestic prices, in essence, will probably start to weaken here. So there's a lot of flux right now in the old crop beans. Next week, that's going to be a big, big issue because 940 is a breakout in November beans. But if you go back below the 920 level in November beans or 915 in November beans, you've got some real technical problems on your hands on the daily chart.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Have a great weekend, Todd.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzlos with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Join us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Dave Dick is here now. He'll help us go through the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, California has passed the nation's first low-carbon fuel standard. The LCFS is designed to reduce by 10% the carbon intensity of all transportation fuels used in California by 2020. Additives such as biofuels will help gasoline meet the 10% reduction target, since many, sugarcane ethanol included, offer a much lower carbon intensity than gasoline. But Growth Energy, a lobbying firm supportive of corn-based ethanol, says the passage was based on shaky science and will unfairly penalize biofuels by adding an indirect land use charge to compute the carbon intensity of biofuels. Similar legislation is pending in 19 other states. California's Air Resource Board says it will continue to study indirect effects of corn-based ethanol and other transportation fuels. The Food and Drug Administration says a stricter rule on livestock feed ingredients aimed at preventing mad cow disease will take effect next week, but cattle producers and other groups will have 6 months to comply. The new rule is designed to keep the livestock feed system free of cattle parts at greatest risk for spreading mad cow disease. The FDA says it wanted to give renderers more time to comply and give other groups, such as cattle producers and packers, time to find other ways to dispose of prohibited material no longer allowed in animal feed. Agribusiness company Bunge Limited swung to a first-quarter loss amid slumping demand. Bunge posted a net loss of $176 million, or $1.76 a share, from year-earlier net income of $322 million, or $2.10 a share. Net sales dropped 26% to $9.2 billion. Bunge's agribusiness segment had a 93% plunge in earnings amid weaker global demand for soybean products as sales fell by 25%. Federal regulators today are privately telling the nation's largest 19 financial institutions how well they performed in stress tests to assess their soundness. The results of the tests won't be made public until May 4th. The slow-motion rollout is intended to blunt market reaction to the news of which banks are healthy, which ones could fail if the recession worsens, and which ones need more money to survive. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit us on the web to hear that program after 5:30 tonight or 6 o'clock, depending on how quickly I can get posted. We'll record with our guest this evening, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, at 4:30. We'll put it up on the web at willag.org tonight, right there on a Friday after probably 6 o'clock tonight. Please visit it and play it if you'd like. You can listen to it off the website or hear it as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. Now, up next, you know, farmers throughout the Midwest are still catching up from that late growing season last year, and so far the cool, wet weather this spring hasn't been much help. I'll have a report on one tillage operation that is likely not to yield them very much benefit. In most of Illinois, it really wasn't fit to plant a corn crop through the mid part of April. Emerson Nafziger says farmers shouldn't worry too much, and that mudding the crop in would do more harm than good. Lately, the University of Illinois agronomist says some farmers have been calling in to ask him about a tillage operation they didn't get done last fall and whether or not it would be okay to strip-till this spring. The short answer from Emerson Nafziger is no, but of course there are exceptions.
One of the big problems with strip-tilling in the spring is that the soil's usually not dry enough to do it well. And so people may be taking off the mole knife and just kind of scratching the surface a little, trying to get some there that will warm up a little bit more. I guess it's always a judgment call. If there's not going to be any other tillage done and it's corn after corn and just going out there with a planter moving trash aside may not quite do it, then you may need to look at strip till as sort of a trash moving row making operation. But let's probably not pretend that it's tillage, because we probably don't want to be going 6 or 7 inches deep in soils that are pretty marginally wet.
Many people, says Nafziger, feel it would be possible to do a strip-till pass, let the field dry out for a week, and then return with the planter. Nafziger's doubtful.
That might be okay if you could do that, say, the last week of March or the first week of April, and it was actually in good shape to do it. But if it's the last week of April or the first week of May, we probably need to have our priorities shift towards getting it planted and not worrying too much about making a strip that will warm up faster.
And that's the bottom line. The later in the planting season, the more critical it is to plant and delay other operations. The second, third weeks of April represent the best time to plant corn in Illinois from top to bottom, and yield losses begin to pile up after that period. Although Nafziger would wait on soil conditions to dry out rather than mudding a crop into a wet field, he, however, is not very concerned about cold soil temperatures, say under 50 degrees, because the later it is, the more likely those soils will warm up quickly. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. Along with us today, as he is each and every Friday, Bruce Bostert. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce. Bruce, are you with me?
Oops.
Oh, hi. I didn't put you on the air. Tell me about cash grain movement in your area. Is there any, and maybe more importantly, is there any movement in the fields?
There's no movement in the fields. I guess that's probably our primary concern right now. Because of the lack of field movement, we are seeing some decent receipts at some of the elevators as people use this time to clean out a few bins and get some grain moved that away. But they'd a lot rather be out driving back and forth in the field, I think.
And as you take a look at the marketplace, how do you see basis holding up over the next week or so?
It's been doing relatively decently. You know, if we could get people out in the fields, that would slow some movement up. Maybe that would provide a little bit more support. Corn, we've picked up a penny or two nearby in the last week. Everything out forward is steady. It continues to be a nearby lead market. Beans, steady to a little bit weaker. The processor numbers have been steady to easier. We've been seeing decent receipts at the processing plants. We got our trucks shot off at one today because they were full, so we're seeing some of that. Sounds like the rivers are relatively quiet. Barge freight keeps drifting lower out there. More and more barges are getting tied off because the freight rates are at kind of uneconomic levels right now. One consultant I was reading today is estimating that 30% of the covered hopper fleet, that's the type of barges we use for grain, are tied off. So that's a huge chunk of the fleet that's just out of service temporarily.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 367 on nearby corn and 1029 on soybeans.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Bruce Bostert is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll be back when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs to NOAA.
It's National Pigs in a Blanket Day. One of the earliest references to pigs in a blanket dates back to 1882, where oysters seasoned with salt and pepper were rolled in a slice of bacon, skewered with a toothpick, and then grilled, broiled, or fried. The recipe comes from the Boston Cookbook. Pigs in a blanket became popular in the U.S. in the 1950s as a meat wrapped in dough. On this day in agricultural history in 1743, Edmund Cartwright was born. Cartwright was an English inventor of the power loom, which improved the speed and quality of weaving. He patented the device in 1785. The invention revolutionized weaving, changing it from a manual process to a mechanical one. Cartwright also invented a machine for combing wool. In 1766, Robert Bailey Thomas was born. He was the founder and longtime editor of the Farmer's Almanac, now known as the Old Farmer's Almanac. In 1833, Jacob Ebert and George Dalty patented the first soda machine. In their heyday, soda fountains flourished in drugstores, ice cream parlors, dime stores, department stores, and train stations. Soda fountains reached their high in the U.S. in the 1940s and 50s. And in 1949, chocolate rationing ended in Britain. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs to NOAA, is with us. He's located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, is the weekend weather going to cooperate or not?
Yeah, for the most part. We had a few little showers and probably even some thunder today in western, and even it got as close as Pike County here before it died out here in central Illinois. But I think most of any significant precip will hold off until later in the weekend. And, in fact, most anything over the weekend probably be restricted to parts of northern Illinois with more substantial and widespread precipitation Monday and Tuesday as this front sags south. So, in general, a pretty good weekend for everybody. And actually, in northern Illinois, they can use a little bit of the rain, even though everybody's chomping at the bit to get into the fields. It's been a little drier up north of I-80 than it has been in the rest of the state.
Now, is this system slowing down? Is that what's happening, or what's happening?
Well, it looks like we're getting a ridge building over the central U.S. right now, which is helping us warm up very nicely and creating this wind. But what's going to happen is the flow is going to stay generally westerly or southwest to northeast through the in the upper levels through the Midwest. And what that's going to do is basically not give any kind of push to this frontal system that's going to be approaching. And it's going to tend to be one of these situations where the front might move through most of Illinois to the Ohio River and then back up, you know, halfway through Illinois and Indiana and then back down again. But right now it just looks like a very slow progression across the state Monday and Tuesday. On the other hand, it does look like it's going to move through, and we'll get a day or two of dry weather in between before the next system starts to affect us. But it's being hard. We're hard pressed to find a good stretch of a week or 7-10 days with dry weather right now.
Right. If that changes, then it moves through partially and then comes back out and then back then heads back to the east. Do we get a lot of rainfall out of that sort of system when it does that, when it backs into you or not?
Well, it's just because that front provides a focusing mechanism for the showers and thunderstorms. The air north of it is coming down, and the air south of it's coming towards the boundary, and the air converges and rises, and that's what causes the showers and thunderstorms. So, just the general presence of that front will generally lead to more widespread showers and thunderstorms. So, I'm really hoping that the forecast is correct right now, and this thing will actually move south of the Ohio River on Tuesday and then clear us out for a good 36 to 48 hours.
And then after that, we have more rainfall?
Yeah, it looks like this pattern is not going to change substantially, and that means we're not going to get an extended period of dry weather, but it looks like next Thursday or Friday another frontal system will come through and bring more rain. So, and these aren't little light rain systems either. They look like they could be rather juicy ones.
Well, we'll keep tabs on them. Thanks much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Hey, have a good weekend. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Don't forget to visit willag.org. You can listen to Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at the marketplace. We'll post it. It's about 6 o'clock this evening at willag.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.